What's up? This is Ryan. As some of you may know, Dave and I tend to record these episodes a little bit early. And in the 4 or so years we've been doing that, it's never really come back to bite us in the butt. That is until this week. When we had recorded this, Michael Keaton's new movie, The Founder, was supposed to be in theaters. But just about the day after we wrapped, it was announced that the studio was going to push The Founder back to January of 2017, right at the height of award season. That left us with a couple choices. Number one, we could keep this episode in the can, as they say, until January and release it then. But to be honest, every January, we always have really great shows that we're super proud of. So we didn't want to do that. And we're really, really lazy. So we wanted to make sure we had an episode for you this week and not have to go out of our way to find another crazy list to come up with. So enjoy a not exactly timely Michael Keaton themed list, but to be honest, any time is a good time for a Michael Keaton themed list. So without further ado, maestro, if you please.
What's up? This is Movies on Up. He's the world's coolest dad. And he's going to prove it. I'm Dave, joined by Ryan.
I'm not a dad.
I can't call you a cool dad.
No, I can call you a cool dad.
I'm okay, dad.
I'm cool, daddy-o.
But that's Ryan. I am Dave. We are Movies on Up. Our tagline this week, he's the world's coolest dad, and he's going to prove it. If you know what movie that's from, hit us up, moviesonup@gmail.com, facebook.com/moviesonup, or Twitter, @moviesonup. If you're correct and we pick you, you win the glorious Movies on Up prize package. So, or even if you guess Ghost Dad this week, because he was a cool dad as well. So any of those ways will win. This week, The Founder, starring Michael Keaton when he invents McDonald's.
Michael Keaton invents McDonald's.
When he steals McDonald's. The Founder comes out, and for years I've wanted to do a Michael Keaton episode.
Even before this podcast.
Yeah.
Before podcasting, really.
Before podcasting, I was just like a 16-year-old kid that's like, hey, let's just sit around and talk about Michael Keaton movies. People are like, what are you talking about? No, let's just, I don't care if we record it. I don't care if other people listen. Let's just talk
about
Michael
Keaton. We'll send it to a radio station.
Yeah. Just we'll yell it out the window. I don't care. I just want to talk about Michael Keaton movies. So that's what we're doing.
We are talking. 16-year-old Dave, you're in luck.
We're talking Michael Keaton movies. I don't know, one of my favorite actors ever. I think I'll go on the limb and say that just because the movies of his that I love, I really, really love.
I think that's it. I feel like he should be a bigger movie star than he is, which is maybe unfair because he was nominated for an Academy Award, and that's certainly not everyone can say that. And he's been making movies that have entertained the shit out of me basically my entire life. But I feel like when you say Michael Keaton, and maybe now we're getting back to that point, but there was probably a good 15 years right around White Noise when you said the word Michael Keaton, and that just
80s,
it was White Noise.
80s and early 90s Michael Keaton, that's one of my favorite movie stars ever. There was kind of a lull,
yeah.
White Noise included.
I liked White Noise.
Game 6, stuff
not
like
on my
that
list.
Weren't that great, but you go back, of all the lists we've done, I think this has average the oldest movies ever. Like
these are classics,
but I mean he's had good stuff. He showed up in The Other Guys, which we talk about a lot. Like that's one of my favorite performances of his, just because he's funny. His career always fascinated me because, you know, he came out with a couple movies that might show up on our list, so I don't want to mention
probably
them, he had a good run with these really good comedies, and then Splash came along and he was offered the lead of Splash, and he felt like if he took that role, every movie he makes from then on out is going to feel like the first few movies he released and Splash, and he's going to be turned into just that. If you listen to him talk, it's fascinating to hear him talk about the Splash decision because everything led to that movie being huge, and it would have been a huge career changer for him to do that, but he didn't want to be pigeonholed into that, and he wanted to do other stuff. And then this young guy named Tom Hanks gets,
TV actor.
Yeah, gets cast in Splash. So I think it's always fascinating to just watch their careers because Tom Hanks, he pigeonholed himself into that for a little bit.
Yeah.
And then
became Tom Hanks. But if you look at his ascendance, it almost, as he's waning. One of them's waxing, the other is waning. I don't know what's the difference.
One's good, one's
care.
Bad.
Yeah, exactly. As one's going up, the other one's going down.
Yeah. Anytime I think of Michael Keaton, I think of Splash. I just think of how different everything would be. Not, I mean, Tom Hanks, when you have talent like that, you're going to be
found.
He would
have found something else.
You have so many stories about actors that could have taken one role and didn't. So, but I just always go to that one because it's fascinating to hear him talk about it, just because that would have changed so many things. But yeah, Splash isn't on my list. I assume it's not on your list. So Ryan, your number five favorite Michael Keaton movie.
My number five favorite Michael Keaton movie is perhaps my biggest stretch. I'm just scanning the list here real quick. No, I guess my number three is kind of a stretch too. But my number five, and I do like all these movies an awful lot. And in large part, it is because of Michael Keaton. Even if he shows up in just a bit part, so to speak, I think he still adds so much to the movie, as he did in 1997's Jackie Brown, directed by Quentin Tarantino, starring Pam Grier, Sam Jackson, Robert Forster, Bob De Niro, and Keaton. For a long time, I've always kind of felt like Jackie Brown was the lost Tarantino movie, so to speak, but I wasn't really sure why I felt that way. And then I think I kind of figured it out. Realizing that Tarantino adapted
Elmore Leonard.
Yes, Rum Punch. That's it. What Tarantino does better than a lot of guys is actually write and direct his own stuff. But Jackie Brown, to me, had really wonderfully crafted characters and wonderfully developed characters, so much so that at least three characters from this do appear in other films. You have Sam Jackson's Ordell Robbie and De Niro's Louis Garcia. Both appear in the 2013 Jennifer Aniston jam, Life of Crime, and there is a Michael Keaton character that may or may not show up in Dave's list later.
Ray Nicolette.
Yes.
I did leave it off, and I'll explain why when you're done.
Because it didn't star him, but one of Dave's favorite movies. Great characters and great story are both hallmarks of Tarantino, but I think by adapting Elmore Leonard's work, it kind of focused him, by him I mean Tarantino, from going off the rails, as he is apt to do from time to time. Jackie Brown, I think, plays out like a great crime movie with a little extra quirk and a little extra charm for good measure. Tarantino has always said that this was his homage to blaxploitation movies of the 70s, which is very true. I mean, Pam Grier is the lead who was doing Coffee. That becomes very, very evident here. If you haven't seen this one, if it's managed to miss your radar, I think that it actually plays out a little more like a Shane Black movie now. It doesn't have quite the jokes to it.
It's the least Tarantino of Tarantino movies.
Right, and it makes sense because it's not his story. I mean, it is a Tarantino version of the Elmore Leonard novel. I love all the cons. I love playing this guy against that lady and these two thinking they're in cahoots and one of them backstabs the other. It does keep you guessing. I think it's a great, great crime movie that, like I said, you just subtract some of the film noir stuff from Shane Black and you add in some good old-fashioned cons and you have yourself Jackie Brown.
This one was on my radar just because obviously Out of Sight jumps out because
right.
Ray Nicolette's such a cool character and I want a Ray Nicolette movie. Like, I want Michael Keaton as Ray Nicolette for a whole movie. Out of Sight, I think, is a perfect movie. It's Soderbergh. It's Elmore Leonard. Two of my favorites. I left it off just because it is a bit part, and I knew I'd work it in somehow or another. In between those, you had Jackie Brown in 97. You had Out of Sight in 98. In between those two Elmore Leonard movies, he did Desperate Measures with Andy Garcia, directed by Barbet Schroeder, which is my number five. He never wanted to be one thing his whole career, so it's cool to see him do stuff like Desperate Measures. And this is late 90s when he's kind of starting to fall off, when he had a really good run in the early to mid-90s. But this one's just a cool premise. Andy Garcia's son needs bone marrow. The only match is this insane serial killer played by Michael Keaton, who's just evil. That's why I like this movie. It's not a great movie. It's a silly premise. But Michael Keaton is so committed, and I love bad guy Michael Keaton. I hope Pacific Heights didn't make your list because I mentioned it. Pacific Heights, he's just really, really creepy. Desperate Measures, he's just this.
RoboCop did not either.
No, and I was going to bring that up because he was, that movie was so bad.
He was good, though.
But I really liked him as the villainish character because he commits to it. Mm-hmm. And, oh God, no, it's going to come up again. He was in Need for Speed, And it, he even committed to that piece of shit garbage movie. But that's what you get out of Keaton, is even in the bad phase, even the White Noise and stuff, you get peak Keaton. I don't think any of these movies, even Jack Frost, like...
If it's a bad movie, he's not letting you down.
Yeah.
It's because it's a bad movie.
I don't think I've ever watched a Keaton performance and thought, like, oh, that's a paycheck.
If Michael Keaton would have been in episode one, that movie still would have sucked.
But he'd have been awesome.
But he would have Keatoned his balls off.
Let's CGI him in Jar Jar's place. Just have Keaton.
He
as
could
Jar Jar,
do it!
Not as Jar Jar, just as Michael Keaton.
Just
rewrite
the world.
Just rewrite the mythology. I don't think I've seen a bad Michael Keaton performance. He's been in bad movies,
right.
But I don't think I've seen one where I thought, like, oh, he just showed up for a paycheck. Like, oh, he just was there. And stuff like Desperate Measures, it's almost like vacation for him because he gets to do so far away from what people expect from him. I really, really like him in Desperate Measures. He's an awesome bad guy. I love him as a villain. And this is one of the craziest villain Michael Keaton performances.
My number four is not villain Michael Keaton. My number four is actually probably, quote unquote, his best performance. It is the one that he was nominated for an Academy Award for. It is Alejandro Iñárritu's Birdman, or The Unexpected Virtue of Ignorance from 2014, starring Keaton, Emma Stone, Naomi Watts, Ed Norton. If you haven't seen Birdman, but you managed to live through 2014, I'm sure that you're aware that it's a pretty good movie. You may also know that Keaton puts in a wonderful performance, as does Edward Norton, for that matter, essentially playing a version of Edward Norton, or what I think the general public assumes of Edward Norton, hearing people talk about Edward Norton. You could also sort of make the same case for Keaton, as he's an incredibly talented actor that may be almost exclusively known for a couple roles a couple decades earlier in his career. It's the same as his character in Birdman. It's the same in real life. I mean, Dave mentioned it, you know, not too long ago, where he didn't want to be pigeonholed into something. That's what's actually happened to his character in this movie. He's been penciled in as the Birdman. People don't know of his character as an actual human being. They just think of him as Birdman. And I would admit that the roles that I like Keaton for, that's what I think of him as. So perhaps I'm pigeonholing him, but I appreciate the fact that he did those because they're amazing and they'll show up a little bit higher on my list. You can argue in 2014, you know, whether or not it was great for movies that this was the best picture winner of that year. But it's hard to argue how wonderfully the movie was actually shot. Iñárritu is an incredibly visual director, and specifically some of the shots near the end of the movie are really, really great. You couple that with an increasingly unhinged lead, and you've got yourself a movie that builds to a real finale, even if that finale is not as real as we're led to believe. I think that this director and this movie take advantage of everything Keaton does well. It's darkly funny, a little bit crazy and intense. And I'll always be grateful for this movie the same way that I'm grateful to Lost in Translation. I feel like it gave acclaim to those two leads, two all-time favorites of mine, and it has allowed them to kind of switch gears, make a little bit of a comeback, and do some interesting stuff moving forward.
I didn't like this as much as I wanted to, but I like Keaton, and
yeah,
he was in it. Like, I didn't really...
Yes, he was.
I like that it was done like a play where it's all one shot and everything. It's shot like that. It's obviously not one take, but
right.
I liked that aspect of it.
Shooting it like a play, and the movie's about a play.
I pretty much hated every other character in this movie, and I wasn't too keen on his character, but I liked Keaton in it, so I couldn't love it that much. But kind of where Keaton's inspiration came from for this movie, he was an actor that played a superhero in 1989's Batman, directed by Tim Burton. That's my number four. I remember this. My brother grew up a big Batman fan, was into everything Batman. I was into Batman. Like, we grew up reading the comics, and this is pre-internet rage days, but I remember Michael Keaton being cast as Tim Burton's Batman and how people were just insane about it. But I was, like, stoked because he had only done, like, 7 or 8 movies before then, and 4 or 5 of them are going to get mentioned in my top 3 or also ran. So I loved Michael Keaton, and I really liked the idea of him as Batman because he was good in everything he did, so I was interested in it. He delivered. I mean, the movie doesn't hold up great. it's kind of hard to watch now. It is dark. It is not super true to the Batman mythology, to the Batman character, but it's entertaining enough. And he's such a good Bruce Wayne. You know, he's a competent Batman, but his Bruce Wayne makes the movie worth watching. I really, really like him as Bruce Wayne. And, I mean, Batman Returns, another solid one. It's good. It doesn't really hold up, but they're still watchable. They're not great like they were when I saw them in 89 and I think 92, but they're watchable now. Look what happened to the franchise when he left, how it just became a joke of itself.
So much so that Clooney will give you money if you were to meet him on the street and tell him you saw his Batman in the theater. He'll just peel you off a ten or whatever. I'm sure he carries tens.
One of my favorite stories of this comic, this Australian comic I listened to, loves Clooney, obsessed with Clooney, paid lots of money to do a dinner with Clooney once where you get to just a handshake and a picture op and you get to say like a couple sentences. He says something to Clooney. He's like, hey, I've loved your whole career. I've loved every move you've made. Like, I've followed your whole career and I love it. And he's like, and Clooney made some joke about like, you stuck me through with Batman. He responds with, yeah, if you didn't make Batman, you wouldn't have been able to make Out of Sight. And Clooney's like, I want to keep you. Like he, that's the big joke with Clooney is just how bad Batman was, and he'll be the first one to tell you. Mm. But I think that says a lot about Keaton, is that once he's done, and yeah, Tim Burton left also,
yeah,
and Schumacher came in, but 3 and 4 are completely different movies than 1 and 2, and a lot of that has to do with Michael Keaton being such a good Bruce Wayne and being such a legit actor and just being really, really good.
This was higher on my list, but I'll move it down to, I guess, my number 3, just so we can keep talking about it. In my youth, this movie was the Avengers. It was the best and really the only wide-release comic book movie that I can remember, and I thought it was amazing. I would have been in kindergarten in 1989, but I distinctly remember seeing this movie in theaters multiple times. And I didn't grow up reading comic books. I mean, at that point, I was 5 years old. I wasn't reading much of anything. But I did love, and I still love superheroes, and I really liked Batman. Keaton's still my favorite Batman. I like him as Bruce Wayne. I like him as Batman. I didn't think there was anything about him that made me want to chuckle. We can mock the voice that Christian Bale used, and a lot of people do mock it. Mock nipples on the bat suit or whatever. I didn't think there was anything about Keaton's Batman specifically that I was like, boy, that sucks. I liked the guy for many of the same reasons that you did. The Joker, again, not having read the comics, that was really my introduction to the Joker, so I didn't really know like his backstory. None of that stuff mattered to me at that point. I took it completely for granted that that's how the Joker came to be. And I love Nicholson. I thought he was great. Even as a kid, I realized that he was completely deranged, but very, very charismatic and wasn't shy about telling you that. I think Burton was actually a great choice for this movie. His directing style is dark, and I think it matches Gotham City. It's not him trying to, I'm going to make a dark, gritty movie because that's what Batman deserves. It's just the perfect director for...
He's a world-building director.
Right. Yeah.
Every movie you take, you're transported to a different world, and that's what Gotham City was in this movie.
Certainly, and it felt like a city that Batman belonged in. The problem I think I have with this movie today is more that the sequel sort of fell short of what I felt was kind of promised in the first one, and that's the whole Harvey Dent storyline that I thought they built in the first one and could have done a better job going forward. Yeah, with Billy Dee as Two-Face. I think that would have been great. But instead, it felt like they did the sequel thing and said, all right, well, Batman had one villain, so Batman Returns, we're going to have two villains. We're going to cram in the love story there with
Three
Catwoman.
Villains, kind of.
Yeah, that's true. With Max. Walken. Yeah, Max Schreck. Was that his name? Yeah. I think it was. I think that was the Nosferatu thing. I want to blame the studio for getting involved there. I have nothing to really back that up. But I think at the end of the day, you mentioned it. You have a first installment, which is really, really good. Everything after that got progressively worse, almost amazingly.
And I mean, the second one's a letdown from this one, but I think it's still watchable.
It's still the best of the sequels that would follow.
Yeah. My number 3 is one of the movies that he did leading up to this. And people couldn't really picture him as Batman because he did comedies mostly. And one of them was 1983, written by John Hughes, but directed by Stan Dragati, Mr. Mom, where Michael Keaton and his wife, Terry Garr, happy, comfortable couple, both have good jobs. Then Michael Keaton loses his, and they decide it's best that he just stay home with the kids. Michael Keaton always brings heart to what he does, and this is one of those where it's, yeah, it's a vehicle. It's a starring vehicle for the guy that kind of broke out in Night Shift, because this was the follow-up to that. Like, this is the first thing that came out, and Night Shift kind of introduced us to Michael Keaton, and then Mr. Mom showed us, like, oh, this guy's legit. This is what people thought his career would be the whole way. It's really funny. It's charming. Because of him, I mean, this is his movie. He is Mr. Mom. It's so charming and funny, just like he is. It holds up well. It's a good movie now. Like, yeah, some of the technology and stuff that he uses at home is a little dated from 33 years ago, but still a good movie.
My number two kind of reverts back to the Michael Keaton not being in it an awful lot, but when he is in it, he does add quite a bit. My number two is a number three. It is Toy Story 3 from 2010, directed by Lee Unkrich, starring Tom Hanks, Tim Allen, Joan Cusack, Ned Beatty, a lot of people, and Michael Keaton. There are so many things that I love about the Toy Story movies as a franchise, and goodness knows that I've talked about many of them, and especially this one a couple times already. Yeah, it almost perfectly follows folks my own age from childhood to adulthood and wraps up a film franchise about as well as possible. And I mean that. It wraps up, meaning it ends, and there are no more sequels.
Till Toy Story 4.
You've still got time to correct that, Pixar. One of the things that I don't seem to credit this series for enough is its ability to add new characters that are very, very memorable. You start with the first one, where basically we introduce everybody. You got Woody, you got Buzz, you got Mr. Potato Head, you got the T-Rex, Slinky, poor dearly departed Ernest. You add Jesse in the second one. By the time you get to the third one, you've got this huge cast of characters that doesn't seem to have reached its limit. I think that Beatty's Lotso is one of the best villains in motion picture history, right up there with Benedict Cumberbatch from Star Trek Into Darkness. I love me some Lotso. You also add Michael Keaton as this vapid Ken doll who's sort of a Lotso henchman, but not really. And I love Timothy Dalton in this movie as the thespian Mr. Pricklepants, the hedgehog. This movie was just able to keep adding great. And it's not just, like, great toys like the Ken doll. Of course, you know, you had Barbie. You have to have the Ken doll. I don't think Michael Keaton is a guy that you would picture for that. But he commits to it. And he's great. Timothy Dalton was great. You know, I mentioned some of the other guys like Ernest. Ratzenberger was great in these movies. Don Rickles was great. It's a great voice cast. And I love all three of these movies. And I'm glad that three ended the way it did. And that franchise has been put to bed.
My number two, also from the 80s, late 80s, 1989, directed by Howard Zeef. It is The Dream Team, starring Michael Keaton, Christopher Lloyd, Peter Boyle, and Stephen Furst, with Lorraine Bacco in there as well, and Philip Bosco and James Remar. This is just a fun movie. Like, this is a time I saw most of these movies in the theater. I grew up going to see Michael Keaton movies at the movies a lot of times. They were adult movies, but they were safe-ish. Like, he had this charm to where 10-year-old me could go to this Michael Keaton movie. You know, he's a patient at a sanitarium with a few of the other guys, and somebody gets permission to take them to a baseball game, and then they end up just in the city on their own. And it's another one of those, like Mr. Mom. Like, it's got heart. It's charming. It's funny. Because of him, he holds it all together. I feel bad that most of my movies, my top three are comedies, because
he's a great comedic actor.
He is a great comedic actor, but he's a great all-around actor, and my list doesn't really represent that, but my also-rans do. This is Pete Keaton. Dream Team is up there with Mr. Mom. Gung Ho, one of my also-rans. These movies are really funny, really charming Michael Keaton comedies from the 80s, and I adore The Dream Team.
My number one is a Michael Keaton comedy from the 80s, and it does fit that description of, like, a comedy that you would feel safe bringing your kids to. You might flinch a little bit when he drops an F-bomb in the movie, but still, to this day, one of my favorite movies. Again, directed by Tim Burton. It's Beetlejuice from 1988, starring Keaton, Winona Ryder, Alec Baldwin, Gina Davis. This is an all-timer for me. Admittedly, it might be a bit edgy for kids. I think it's great for early teens. And for many of the same reasons, I love Ghostbusters, and we talked about that about a month ago. The humor works on multiple levels here. There's a ton of sight gags that, at this point, I was 4 years old when I saw Beetlejuice, and I laughed my ass off at four. I will laugh my ass off at 34. There's stuff that goes way over a four-year-old's head, but adults will be able to get something out of it. Everything I praised Birdman for doing well with Keaton is really on display here. This is the map of how you use Keaton very well. Some actors, you know, and directors just work really, really well together. And obviously, Burton and Keaton are a great example of that synergy. And the special effects in this may be a bit dated, but it's a great ghost story. It's a great haunted house movie, or whatever the hell else we've called it to put it number one on one of our lists. And I haven't done any actual research on this, because that's not how we roll around here, but I would guess that Beetlejuice may be the leader, at least my leader, for the amount of times I've put this not just on my list, but at number one on one of my lists. I think that highly of it, and with Burton and Keaton perhaps both back, fingers crossed, for a Beetlejuice sequel, I'm super pumped. Even if it's terrible, it can't take away the nearly 30 years of enjoyment I've had from Beetlejuice. I adore this movie. I will watch it at the drop of a hat. You know, I've gone to watch it in the theaters recently. I think last year, the drive-in played Beetlejuice, Ghostbusters, and Gremlins in a triple feature for Halloween. And whatever other garbage they were playing on the other two screens, could not care less. Give me 1988 and 1984 movies. And I honestly felt like a kid again watching these movies. I enjoy them just as much, probably more now than I did then. And I love me some Beetlejuice.
And this movie says so much about Keaton because, yeah, obviously it's called Beetlejuice and he plays Beetlejuice, but right. Winona Ryder's in this movie more than him.
Yep.
Alec Baldwin, Gina Davis.
He Hannibal Lecters this movie.
Yeah, he's in this movie 15 minutes, 20 minutes, maybe. Like, this is an Alec Baldwin, Gina Davis, Winona Ryder movie. If you watch the movie, that's their movie. But you think of Beetlejuice, Michael Keaton.
Yep.
Like, you 100% think of Michael Keaton for good reason. And if you read Tim Burton interviews on this, like, Beetlejuice came from Michael Keaton. Beetlejuice wasn't written as Michael Keaton did him. Like,
I think he was supposed to be much scarier.
Yeah, Michael Keaton took this character and just had this take on it that Tim Burton fell in love with and just let the movie fall around it, and it was worth it. It's a classic. Kids that didn't grow up when we grew up know Beetlejuice. They've seen Beetlejuice.
The cartoon or...
Yeah, that blows my mind that there was a cartoon of this. But it's a movie about death.
And if
it's 100% about death and not wanting to move on.
They die right at the beginning.
Yeah.
And if you think about it, this movie, if a sequel does happen, it'll be 30 years before we get a sequel. Not like a reboot or anything. It's a direct sequel. And the fact that Keaton would do it at this point, Academy Award nominee Michael Keaton would go back to the character of Beetlejuice kind of shows the affinity that he has for that character as well.
I knew this would be on your list, so I left it off of mine.
Well, I put it number one on every list that even it's if applicable
it,
for.
Even if it were on my list, it would not be number one. I went with the Keatonist of Keaton movies, the most Keaton you can get on one screen, with 1996's, directed by Harold Ramis, one of the best comedy directors ever. It is Multiplicity, starring Michael Keaton, Michael Keaton, Michael Keaton, Michael Keaton, and Andy McDowell. I love this movie. It's one I will watch it every time it's on. It's 20 years old now. I still bring it up. I still talk about it all the time. It shows up on the on Stars every once in a while. I'll watch it. I've made my kids watch it. I absolutely love and adore this movie. And everything I've said good about Keaton in my previous four and your four and any other movie, everything that we've said good about Keaton applies in this movie. He commits so hard to four different roles, at least. There's more, but he commits to every one of them, and each one of them are different. And even though it's Michael Keaton, you can tell just by mannerisms and stuff, which
exactly which one it is at that
which
time.
I mean, one of them's obvious to know, but yeah. You can tell which one is which one, and all of them are Keaton, and all of them are so good. They all get his 100%. Everybody wishes, what if there were more than one of me? Like, everybody. Like, especially when you're busy. You have kids. You have a family. Like, you got to work. You got to be with your kids.
You've got two dates scheduled for the same night.
Yeah. It's so good because the premise is so... It's something like we hold Groundhog Day to...
I was going to say, I hate to keep making the comparisons between Keaton and Bill Murray, especially with Andy McDowell being in each of these.
I feel like... I know we hold Groundhog Day on a very, very high pedestal. I think Multiplicity is right there, but not quite as high, but it's close.
I actually like Multiplicity better.
Do you really?
I do.
See, I think Groundhog Day is an all-time classic, just overall movie. I think Multiplicity is one of the best comedies ever. I love Multiplicity. It's so funny. It's everything good about Michael Keaton times four. It's charming. There's heart. It's funny. There's depth to it. It's just such a good movie. And yeah, the effects could be better. They've come a long way in 20 years. Like, you have something like Orphan Black, which is essentially a gritty reboot of Multiplicity, which I love. I don't want to make you think I'm talking bad on Orphan Black. I absolutely love Orphan Black. But the technology's come a long way. So, yeah, watching it, it's a little dated, but the movie's good. The laughs are good. The jokes are good. Keaton is Keaton. I absolutely adore this movie, and I love it. Love it so much. That's why it's my number one. It is Pete Keaton. It's absolute Pete Keaton. Also Ran's for you.
I like Johnny Dangerously enough. Also Ran is probably good territory for that to be in, especially with how much I like the rest of my list. Not that it would stop me at all from putting Minions on the list, because he really wasn't in that much. But I do like Minions unabashedly. Oh. I don't like it as much as like the Despicable Me movies. But fuck it, how can you not
like
it?
I might
like
it more than two.
Maybe.
Because two was That's two possible. And Minions are the same movie to me. Like they're enjoyable, but they're not Despicable Me.
I haven't seen Spotlight yet.
It's on Netflix now.
I saw that when searching for Marco Polo earlier this week, and I was like, yeah, I'll get to that.
It's good with the cast it had and the subject matter that it had. I feel like it could have been a little bit more powerful. He's good in it. Ruffalo's good in it. Everybody's good in it.
For sure.
It's good, but it's not great. It's one of my also-rans. Gung Ho was right there in that Mr. Mom era, pre-Batman. Just one of those fun comedies with a lot of heart. Clean and Sober is what really opened my eyes to say, like, oh, this dude's legit. And I could see him as Batman because that's you have Mr. Mom coming over with draws. And then My Life. I know I mentioned My Life in some sort of list before. I don't remember what, but I know I've shoehorned it in somewhere. But he's just one of those that going through the list, like if he shows up, he's good. I mean, he's in that stupid First Daughter movie. Like, even his bad movies, he's good in. Live from Baghdad was an HBO movie that was pretty solid. I mean, Jack Frost is probably the only one that sticks out as like, oh, that's a terrible, terrible movie. So, I mean, if a Michael Keaton movie's on, I'll pretty much watch it, unless it's Jack Frost.
Super pumped to see him in Spider-Man.
Oh, yeah, especially if he's Vulture, like you're saying.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's one of the really few... people that we know who they're playing. I mean, we know Aunt May, we know Iron Man, we know Spider-Man, and it seems like Vulture is going to be the villain in that, which I think is great. More of him in everything, and I'm okay with that. Maybe what's not as great is Nazis, but that will be our topic next week, is our five, I don't even know what we're going to call it, five favorite Nazi movies?
I don't know. I forgot about that.
Five best movies featuring Nazis.
Five favorite Nazis. Not even movies, just our favorite five favorite Nazis.
So like Apt Pupil would work, because it's not really
a
bunch of Nazis. But
a Nazi.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And a Apt Pupil Nazi.
Yeah, Apt Pupil was one that came to mind. There's other Nazi movies, I'm sure.
Certainly. Inglourious Basterds has a ton of Nazis.
Yeah.
Wow.
So yeah, that's next week. I don't know why. I hope there's a Nazi movie coming out. And I didn't just think like, oh, let's talk about Nazis.
There's probably, maybe like a war movie, World War II movie coming out. I don't know.
I hope.
We'll figure it out by next week.
But until then.
Keep it up.